our first speaker, Ms. Jean.
Hi, family. I'm Jean. I'm an addict.
Hi, Jean.
And I'm nervous. And I know that's okay today. I would like to thank the program committee for asking me to share my experience, strength, and hope. CPR, CNA. I can remember my first time coming to this convention, and for years in recovery, I stayed away from the convention because it just seemed so overwhelming. It seemed like there was always drama, there was always something, and that scared me. So my sponsor, I had a sponsee at the time who was in an Oxford house, and she got a scholarship to come to the convention and asked me to bring her. And that was that was some years back, but in being of service to her, it allowed me to experience this wonderful thing, this wonderful convention with so many addicts. And I couldn't believe there were so many addicts in one place at one time. And we were clean. I was like, wow. You know, I was so amazed. And for me, Narcotics Anonymous, when I got here, it was the power of attraction. Not the promotion. It was the power of attraction that kept me coming back to know that I belong here, in spite of whether I use the same drugs as you or not, if I did the same thing as you did or didn't, if we have been through same experiences or not, I belong here. I belong here. And a time to heal. When Kenny called me and said, asked me to speak and said, I have a topic for you. I think it's the perfect topic for you, a time to heal. He said, because of your surgery, you just had knee surgery. I said, what? Because that never crossed my mind. When he said a time to heal, that did not cross my mind. That I had a tumor removed from my knee back in June of last year. That was the last thing that crossed my mind. When I heard a time to heal, I thought mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and then when he brought that up, I said, well, you know what? The way I recovered in this process was physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. So it's not out of order. It's not out of order. And so I've prayed, and my sisters and them have prayed for us, my sponsee brother and I, for us to be able to just be used as a vessel to share the parts of our story that hopefully connects out there. For me, I got here in July of 1990. I got here by the way of a therapist who told me to come see you folks. Y'all were going to help me to stay clean. She told me if I put down the drugs, she could help me with all the other stuff. And I always share this in my story because my thing to her is it's not the drugs. I don't have a drug problem. My man is whipping my ass. My mother abandoned me. My father molested me and blah, 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 blah. I was the biggest victim alive. And she told me, put the drugs down. I'll help you with all the other stuff. You go see these people in Narcotics Anonymous and they will help you to stop using. And I told her I wasn't coming to tell y'all my business. But when I got here, I saw a woman who had about 15 years at the time, and she was talking about herself, and she was crying, and she was an elderly woman. We were at the courthouse, and she was crying. And I was like, damn, when I talk about me, I cry. You know, as soon as I walked in my therapist's office, she was pushed the tissue box over towards me. I would immediately start crying anytime I talked about me. And I knew I needed help. I didn't think I needed help with drugs, but when she told me to put the drugs down, that was the hardest thing I had to do. It wasn't so much as putting the drugs down, but it was staying stopped when a crisis came up, when I was bored, all those things, when I was happy, when I was sad, all the emotions, I always went back to using. And so for me, Narcotics Anonymous has been the only thing that that has helped me to stay stopped. My clean date is September 9th, 1990, and it's one day at a time. I'm still in this process because it continues to work for me. Narcotics Anonymous works for me. It not only helped me to stop using drugs, it has helped me to heal in so many different areas. I remember my first sponsor, and she wasn't my first sponsor. I went through a few people before I got to this particular young lady who told me, "Jean, get a God of your understanding, because that might be the only thing that'll keep you clean. Don't make your God that chair over there or that doorknob. Somebody may move your God, that if it's that chair and stuff. But get a God of your understanding." At the time, we didn't have literature that told us our God need to be caring, loving, and kind. We just didn't have that at the time. And so when she told me, get a God of my understanding, because that might be the only thing, because as a sponsor, she's doing the same thing she asked me to do. So don't put those unrealistic expectations on her to think she's going to be on the other end of the line every time I call to say my butt is on fire, because at that time, everything caused my butt to be on fire. Yeah. And I was one of these addicts that came in. I couldn't sleep, so I would be up at night shampooing my rug and stuff, wanting to call people 10, 11, 12, 13, 1 o'clock in the morning, all that kind of craziness. And so she told me, get a God and pray to this God and ask this God to help me to stay clean, which was my first admittance in the first step that I could not keep myself clean. And then get back on my knees at night and thank that God for keeping me clean. And so through the years in recovering spiritually, and let's go with physical first, because when I got here, I had a lot of side effects from active addiction. And the first thing I encountered after I stopped using was excruciating pain in my head. Oh my gosh. I used to say, if you could just take my head off and sit it over there, I'll be okay. The rest of me could be all right, which is impossible. But that's how I felt. I just could not deal with the pain. And the doctors couldn't figure out what was going on, you know. They did all these tests and stuff, and at one point I got to where they had me on antibiotics and I was still running fevers and all that. And we just could not figure out what was going on. The x-ray showed this to this. But finally, I got to an ENT doctor who ordered the CT scans and stuff, and what they discovered is that I had sniffed so much stuff that my airway was blocked. And they needed to go in and operate. And she was saying to me, well, we're going to be very close to your brain. So you need to be aware that we can't guarantee anything, but we're going to try to unblock your airway, straighten up your deviated septum, fill all that, you know, stuff, just repair my nostrils from all the damage I had done. And I remember being so afraid that I was not going to come through that surgery. And then it dawned on me, Gene, God don't need to give you a warning if he wants you. He'll take you anytime. He don't need to put you through surgery. And all. If he wants you, you're gone. That's it. Right. Your time is up. So it still didn't give me any comfort. I knew it up here, but it still did not give me any comfort. And I remember coming into the meetings, and all I knew was that I could share it with the people in the meeting how scared I was to go through the surgery. And one of the young ladies at my own group at the time in D.C., I got clean in the D.C. area. I remember Jean came to the hospital with me, G.W., and she was the contact person. Because when I reached out to my family, not one family member, and my daughter was too young. And in fact, I didn't have a healthy relationship with my family at the time. It was just my mother and I and my daughter in this area. And Jean came to the hospital with me, and she was the contact. And I remember coming out of surgery and being in the recovery area, and they're letting her in. And it was just overwhelming to see her, you know, through the haze and everything else. I could see her. I could see. And it was and I have to say this, there was two of us named Jean at the same meeting, noon meeting. I'm black Jean, she's white Jean. So we call her Jeannie and call me Jean. So Jeannie was there when I woke up. And when I got up to my room, I remember people from the rooms from my home group made it up to my room and had balloons and all the stuff, and they had me in this chamber trying to ice and all kinds of stuff. And one of the guys in my network took the doctor outside and said, "You can't give her any narcotics." Like, he was the doctor. "You can't give her any narcotics." That doctor looked at that man, they had operated all this. You know, so that was my first process when I made it through there. Now, the sinus infection stopped. And I have to say, here it is over 26 years later, I still struggle with sinus infections on a regular basis. And I've had a couple of surgeries since. But you know what? Through it all, I'm glad I could breathe. I remember dating a guy, and he said, "Boy, your nostrils real open." I said, "What, you think God made a mistake? He has a reason for that. All that shit I've been through with sinus surgeries and stuff, they're just right for what needs to be done. God ain't make no mistake." So I have to keep that in mind, you know. And here it is. It's been one surgery after another after another, and each of them have been healing. And I thank God for that, that today I have insurance. Today I go to the doctor, because in active addiction, I wasn't going to no doctor. I wasn't going to the dentist. She might see up my nostril and stuff. I go to the doctor today. I take care of myself, because y'all told me that that was one of the responsible things that recovery would give me, choices I could make. I could go to the doctor. I could do the necessary things that needs to be done. And thank God for sponsorship. I have a male sponsor, but I have no problem calling and saying, "Look, they talking about doing surgery for fibroids. This is what it is." he has a wife. He's good. So, you know, this is what it is. So we're going to go through another process here. You know, so I've been through several processes, but the most recent one is the knee surgery. About a year and a half, 2 years ago, I realized that my right leg was almost twice the size as my left leg. And the look of it didn't bother me at first. It was like, "Oh, that looks odd." But then as time kept going, I noticed that my leg was swelling. I love Zumba. I watched some other people in the room lose a lot of weight and do some things through Zumba. So I went and found a Zumba class. Y'all told me if I see something or someone change, ask them, what did you do? What are you doing? How did you get that way? So, you know, I saw the result of a friend who does Zumba faithfully. She always says she leave it on the wood. And I said, "Okay, I'm signing up for a Zumba class." Well, I love Zumba. And it became painful. I remember they had asked my Zumba instructor in our class to come and perform at the Health Expo in D.C. And that was the most painful thing, hitting it on that cement. And I had a knee brace on and stuff, but at the end of that performance, I said, "Oh no, something is wrong." And I went to my doctor and told him I need to have this checked. And after we did the x-ray and stuff, he referred me to an orthopedic surgeon, and she looked, and that woman says, "Oh, you have something growing there. I could cut it and pop it out." And I looked at her, I said, "You're not touching me. You're not touching me. You're too comfortable with how you could cut and pop it out. You're not touching me." So I told him, "I need another referral, second opinion." And he sent me to someone at another hospital in D.C. And that guy said, "Oh, this is fascinating." Yeah. I was like, that's fascinating. What's going on? And he showed me, "Look, it's growing and it's getting your joint of this." Now, he's not telling me all what this is growing and getting in joint. But okay. He said, "I need to refer you to a specialist." I said, "Well, you are the..." So he said, "Oh, no. I need to refer you to a specialist." I still didn't get it. And what I'm talking about is denial. Denial becomes comfortable at times just to help me to get by to the next till I can embrace whatever it is that's coming down the pipe. And so when he gave me the doctor's number, and I called. And when they say oncology, I hung up the phone. I called his office back. I said, "Look, he gave me the name. Is this the right person?" "Yeah." And so the doctors talked. And next they were calling me, telling me to report to the Cancer Institute of Washington. I said, "Oh, shit." And when I got there, I just realized that whatever it is, it was going to be okay, no matter what. God has not brought me this far, with a leg, without a leg, whatever it is, it's going to be okay. And within several weeks, in fact, he scheduled it for a couple weeks. Okay, by then, I bought an MRI, all that kind of stuff. He says, you know, you have a large tumor. It's no sense biopsying. We need to get that out. He said, you have no more room in your knee. It's displaced your kneecap and stuff, and it's going up your leg, the thigh in the area. So at that point, acceptance was the key, you know, definite, and it's always the key. So accepting what is, and he said, okay, we'll schedule surgery. Well, I'm a person, I like jazz. I love jazz. I don't like it. I love jazz. And the jazz festival, first week in June, some of y'all know which festival that is. And so they called me back and said, he has a cancellation. I said, oh, no, I have some things I need to do first. My appointment is the 8th. We good. I'll be there for surgery on the 8th. But no, I need to take care of that. So what I'm talking about is finding that balance in whatever it is that we need to do. That is healing for me, finding that balance in life in all situations. And so, because they told me one extreme or another, that's where addiction lies. Middle ground is where recovery is for me. So I had to go to the jazz festival. The following week, I was in surgery. And when they came back to say the tumor was benign, and you know what? That did not happen for several weeks. Because after I came out there, they was going to do in and out surgery. And I could not figure out, how the hell are you going to send me home? I've never walked on crutches before. And that day, he looked at me. He says, you know, we're admitting you to the hospital. And about 3 days later is when they were ready to send me home. After they taught me how to walk on crutches, after they taught me, okay, we've given you this medication, now we're going to have you say you don't want to continue on this, so let's work out a plan on how we're going to do your medication management. So what I'm talking about is being able to tell them who you are. You don't have to get into, well, I'm an addict. No, I don't get into all that. I just say, you know what, I can't do narcotics like that. And so they worked out the plan and sent me home and stuff. And I took another addict with me when I went in to hear the results, because they had moved a 9x12 centimeter tumor out of my knee. I had no clue what the results were going to be. So another addict went with me, and she was right along. Wherever I stepped, she stepped. She was right in the room like, okay, let's hear this. You know, she was right there for me. And it was a glorious day when I heard it was not cancerous. But they haven't released me as yet. And I'm all right with staying, because some days I tell them, I say, it feels like my leg is getting ready to break. I don't know what it is, but it just doesn't feel right. And I don't need to be a doctor to know all what it is, but I know it doesn't feel right. And until then, I just keep it moving and just keep doing what I need to do. So for me, that's the physical process of it. When I got here, the emotional pain I was in, I could not identify the emotional pain, but I was in so much pain. What I identified was my man whipping my ass. I know what it is to fight and come out with a black eye and go show up for work, and where they get to the point where they no longer asking me what happened. Don't ask me what happened. You already know what happened. I'm not telling you no lies, and we're not going all there. So I was familiar with that kind of pain. But when I put the drugs down, the pain I was in was so scary to me that I could not trust myself. Because even though I know certain things was not what I perceived it to be, at times, I would start moving. My actions would start going to responding to that pain. I remember one day being in the metro station, and I thought I saw a young lady. One of my network over here laughing. I saw a young lady who, she was my daughter's babysitter, and she was, whatever, she was with my man. She's supposed to be watching the baby, and she's there doing her jobs. What the hell, you know? And I thought I saw her. Now, I knew this woman lives in New York. I used to live in New York. Last time, she's in New York. She's not. And I saw her. I saw an image of thought of her, and I started to move towards that person in the train station. And I remember the panic within saying, "Jean, stop, stop." And I'm moving, and I'm moving. And my mind is telling me, push that bitch in the track. And my mind, I'm moving. And everything in me is saying, stop, stop. And I remember just as that. I remember getting on that train and getting off GW stop. And I called my sponsor and I cried. I said, I'm losing my mind. I'm scared. And I'm shaking now just as I was shaking then. I was scared. I said, I'm going to go to jail or lose my life. I'm going to lose my freedom. I cannot trust myself. So what my sponsor told me to do, she said, Jean, you got to get all those things out of your head. And what I'm talking about is the pain, the post-traumatic stress from all that shit I had been through. And knowingly that I don't want to act on those feelings, but yet I'm still moving towards it. And so she told me, get a little pad and write down when those things, you got to get it out of you. So I would walk around with a little notepad and write down what was going on so I could get it out of me. You know, and then she started working with me through the step work process. You know, only by his grace. Only by his grace. And from that process, I started building a relationship with my higher power. I started processing and writing and stuff became part of that mental process to healing. It was a time to heal all those wounds. So writing the steps, writing and meeting with my sponsor, talking about what was going on and stuff, so I could get it out of me so I'm not acting out all the darn time. And then once I really started building a relationship with my higher power and really developing that relationship with my higher power, I realized that those are not characteristics of my higher power. My higher power is loving, caring, kind, forgiving and stuff. So I needed to forgive so that I could be free, so that I could heal. And in going through that process, it was about forgiving my dad. When my sponsor told me to send my dad to Father's Day, I said, are you crazy? I said, okay, but I'll pray on it. He told me, let him off the hook, Gene. You're not going to have a healthy relationship unless you resolve those issues. And so I had to forgive my father, send him a card, tell him I forgive you. I want to see my siblings again. It would have been 25 years since I walked away, telling that man, if you touch me again, I'm going to kill you. It had been 25 years. And so in 2007, sending him that card, and it was in the last batch of mail they picked up when he was moving to Florida, from New York to Florida. In the last batch of mail, without a return address, just my phone number and the card that my sponsor created with my words to say, I forgive you, forgive me. And to be able to then start to reestablish a relationship. Well, in December, we're all going on a cruise. In fact, I'm going, one of the ladies in my network was sharing something, and he says, oh, can you send the information? I thought, are you really talking about being in the same place with me at the same time? So it's an ongoing process. The time to heal is on, and right now is the time to deal with that, being in the same place, same time. And I thank God for it. My time is up. I love you all. Thank you. Thank you for letting me share.